Pero
here's got your Toradora.
Oh, Dora.
Drive up a lonely Tony.
And Tony.
Welcome to Say Yes to the Chef. Our guest today is Belinda Macri. She's the owner of Clearwater Retreat in Chapel Hill. And I'm Janice Escott, a certified Cordon Bleu chef and instructor. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. I'm Kelly Taylor, a chef and instructor. How are you today?
I'm great today on this beautiful day. And Belinda, good morning.
Good morning.
It's so good to have you here. And welcome to North Carolina and welcome to Chapel Hill.
I know. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
She hasn't been here very long. That's why we're doing this little welcoming thing when we first start out. And Clearwater Retreat, a natural wellness retreat center. And it's in Chapel Hill, so tell us where first.
Okay. It's located kind of as if you're going towards the Governor's Club, if you're familiar with the area. So it's, I always go back to Merritt's because everybody seems to know where Merritt's sandwich shop is, so famous. So yes. It's just right around the corner from there, off to the left. So from here where we are in Carrboro, it's only 10 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it is south.
It's just south of
Chapel Hill. Just a little bit south. Okay, so what is your website? We'll start out with the website.
It is clearwater-retreat.com.
Okay, clearwater-retreat.com. And it has beautiful stuff on it.
Yeah.
And even a video, which was really fun.
Thank you.
Of one of your classes that you taught there.
Yes.
So let's start by asking you about yourself. I know that this adventure that you are on now sort of began when you were living in Europe. Is that right?
Yes, it did indeed.
Tell a little bit about that, if you would.
Absolutely. I had the pleasure and really honor of living in Europe for about 5 years. And I started in London. I was with my family, two boys and my husband at the time. And we went from London to Prague thinking, let's continue our adventure, right? And learning as much as we can and seeing as much as we can see, showing our boys the greater, larger part of the world. And when we were in Prague, ended up being a very challenging time for me. It was a time of rebirth and a time of kind of trying to sort my own self out and who I was. And that all came from a depression that I had when I first moved there. Language was very difficult. Mm-hmm. The culture was very difficult. Here I came from California, so I felt very lost. And really, it was from an illness that I later had and a doctor that we finally found that brought me into his clinic and showed me many of the practices, really not showed me, but helped me heal from many of the practices that what I now understand are Ayurvedic practices and energy healing. So those are the two practices that I recovered from this really horrible, horrible illness that I didn't know if I was going to make it or not.
Oh, my. Wow.
Yeah. So when I left Prague, it was my mission to then say, I got to share this and learn as much as I can about these two practices that I can share with others so they don't have to go through what I went through. Mm-hmm. Because they're practices that we can implement every day to help us stay in a really vibrant state and not get to the point where I was.
And then you moved back?
Yep.
And
then
you moved back to California, or did you move here?
Yeah, good question. I actually moved from Prague back to Massachusetts because family was in Maine, and the boys were still there in about elementary school at that time. So we moved back to Massachusetts, and from there I began my education. I first went to Spa Tech Institute in Ipswich, Massachusetts, and a full program on energy healing called Polarity Therapy. Unbelievable, profound changes happened in my life with that. And from there, went to the Chopra Center in California, where I started with, their Perfect Health program, then went into their Ayurvedic program, to their Advanced Ayurvedic program, and was blessed to sit side by side with Deepak Chopra on many of his book signing events in New England. And from there, met many Ayurvedic doctors that are Dr. Suhas Kirsagar, who's with them now, actually will be visiting the retreat, doing some work there from California, and Dr. Frowley, and so many I've been influenced by that have taught me and kind of helped me along the way.
How long has it taken to like from when you first decided to go down this path and start studying, how long has this been?
Since 2003.
Ah, so it's been a while.
It's been a long time. It's been the journey of learning and, you know, when things line up, as we were talking before, they just start lining up and things are meant to be and they effortless flow for you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those struggles that I kept going through and kept experiencing, telling me this is not my path.
Yeah.
To where I was awakened to my path. Yeah.
Yeah, but you still keep fighting for a while.
Right.
Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I had to go through a lot, then went through a divorce, and that was 5 years ago. So we learned so much through that, but my guidances were telling me just that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing anymore. Mm-hmm. And this appeared.
So how did you get to Chapel Hill? All of those wonderful travels, and here you are in little old Chapel Hill.
I know. Go figure, right?
I don't even know myself.
Well, no. we talked about that because Kelly and I often look at each other and say, how did we get here?
Yeah. Okay. It's so true. Actually, it's my son. He decided on Chapel Hill. We visited many colleges when he was ready for him to go off to college. And he arrived here and just said, this is it.
Yeah.
I arrived here and I said, this is it.
I did exactly the same thing with my daughter. Yeah. She said, Mom, come to Chapel Hill. So here I am.
It's amazing.
Exactly.
And then I have another son that's graduating high school up in Massachusetts. And he committed back last spring to come down and play lacrosse as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he committed, I said, I'm there. Because then I'll have both boys starting this fall with me.
Oh, that's nice.
That's great. No, I'm so fortunate.
Oh, that is
my
just
blessings.
Great.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the polarity therapy? You said, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and you're not alone. you're not alone. My mission is to try to get it out there. Mm-hmm. It's one of those, I have to say, you have to just come and experience. Polarity therapy was started back by a chiropractor in California, Dr. Randolph Stone. He discovered, wow, there's more to the body than what we think. And what by touching, feeling, and what chiropractic work was doing, so he wanted to take it a little bit further. So he traveled the world. It actually ended up in India, where he opened up a retreat to allow people to come in and experience energy healing.
Hmm.
And so that's why Ayurveda and polarity therapy go so hand in hand. There's actually yoga poses that are given through polarity therapy to help correct the energy flow to allow you to have vibrancy. So it's a... polarity itself first starts with cranial sacral work.
Mm-hmm.
And from cranial sacral work moves down to foot reflexology and then to balancing all the energies of the body. So it's a point based, so neutralizing. So positive and negative with finger pointing coming together to neutralize a point.
Hmm.
Other than the cranial sacral, which is hands on in the foot reflexology, we work on the front of the body, the back of the body. We work on clearing the aura. We work on the chakra points and really just fine tuning and bringing in whatever that person needs at the moment. As we know, energy changes in a second.
Mm-hmm.
So is it basically all hands-on or some hands-on? And
yes.
How does that work?
It's really both. It's both hands-on and hands-off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say it's one or the other. It's just a beautiful blend of both.
Hmm.
And when people come out of a polarity session, their clarity, their focus, their ability to allow to manifest whatever it is that they want is there. Because again, we're releasing energies. Great doctor, Dr. Candace Pert, I was introduced many years ago, and she is all about an emotion starts as energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we have an emotional issue, it gets lodged in the body as an energy, right? So as we go in with energy healing and we release the block that's really releasing that emotional tag that's there, let's say somebody went through a horrible fight with a loved one, and that fight that they had, they no longer think it's part of them, but on an energy level, it's still within their body. Now it's beginning to manifest out in a way that's causing issues, mm-hmm. whether it be a sore knee, whether it be a stomach issue, whether it be any issue in their body, that energy point is now growing because it was never released on that level. So there's so many powerful ways that and that polarity works to help people move through and move on in their life.
So how are those points, those energy points, discovered?
By a healer, by an energy healer, somebody that actually has been trained to know, sense those blockages, and so be able to move them.
Okay.
And you can do that.
And
that's what you went to
exactly.
go
to do. That's what I went and trained to do. Exactly.
So it can be anywhere on the body, from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet.
Exactly. I mean, it's very, for many people, because you start with cranial sacral work, immediately at that point, they're out.
Yeah,
because it soothes the entire nervous system.
Well, let's talk about the cranial. Where is that located, and how do you? What is that?
Sure.
Describe it.
So initially, when the person first gets on the table, one thing that we initially do is that we call in an affirmation. And as we know, and studies have shown, affirmations are so positive that when we use affirmations in our life, we can manifest things. Right.
Yes.
So we call in an affirmation right at the beginning of a session, calling in whatever this person requires for the session. Okay, so we start there. And that's a crystal on the heart and a crystal on your third eye.
And why a crystal?
Crystals are conduits of energy, and so they raise vibration.
Okay.
And I use a crystal singing bowl that is absolutely unbelievable, that also raises vibration, and I have it tuned to the heart. So you can get singing bowls tuned to whatever chakra that you want to. Mine is specifically to the heart. And then after that, I go in and I take my hands and go underneath the skull. And at the base of the skull, there's a little inlet, if you will. So almost if you feel the base of your skull right now, your head, and you go all the way down to the bottom of the base, you kind of can feel that little point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the start of your spinal cord.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So we go in there and we hold that area, and we just hold it and use intention of sending light, sending calm, sending peace throughout the entire spine, all the nerve endings, everything, and you just begin to melt. It is unbelievable. It's really beautiful work. And from there, we do other points that begin to relax out the body. So the person then can be in state of receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you got to be able to want to receive. And if you come in doubting, you come in saying, this is not going to work, or this is hokey pokey, then it won't work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come in just open to receive and know that whatever you're receiving is healing and beautiful, then...
And that's actually the way it is so often with food that we eat.
Exactly.
So many people that I know say, oh, doesn't really make any difference. I'm going to eat all this lunch meat I want, and I'm going to...
Funny that you picked lunch meat.
I'll tell you why, because the other day I was around somebody who was doing that and thought that I was... What? I don't know. Not telling her the truth. Well, how could it possibly not be... You know, wonderful for me. Well, read the ingredients. So it's that kind of thing. It's that doubting kind of thing. It doesn't matter, and
right.
I that kind of thing. So,
right. So
when we come with a positive feeling about whatever it is, and that we have something that we know needs attention, then that kind of energy work works.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not instantly or anything like that. Maybe it takes a little while. Is that correct?
Well, a lot of times it can work instantly.
Yes, it can.
You know, and then, but if it's an issue that is withstanding in the body for a long time, it may take a couple of sessions and for it to hold.
Right.
So, yes. So I usually, if I work with somebody, I may have them come back with, let's do 3 sessions, 4 sessions, and then see where you are and see how you feel from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's the thing about Ayurveda, at least my understanding, is that that makes it a little different than Western medicine and right, is that it's a balance of emotional, spiritual, physical, that all of them together, right? You can't do one without the other.
It's mind, body, spirit together.
Yeah. So,
when you achieve it through doing all of those.
Right.
Yeah,
but you need to put attention to each one, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like you're saying, if the emotions are starting the energy block, which starts building or just staying there, and then that causes a physical problem.
Right.
Right. So you have to go back to the emotional part.
Right.
Right. So it's a very different approach, and I think people aren't really aware of what that is.
That's right.
And how it even
how you can
understood.
Do it in your life.
Right. Right. So
right. And it is something that is so easy. And once you begin putting these, what we just call practices in, so I'll hand it back over to you. Did you have a question?
Okay, no, I just want to say that this is yes to the chef.
We have to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Look, I'd like you to explain what Ayurveda is, because people don't know what that is.
That was my question, too. So.
I would absolutely love to, because it's my mission to try to get it out there.
Well, then, you've got a platform.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Ayurveda is really, it's an ancient healing system from India. What it is. It's 5,000 years old. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows yoga. Yoga has come through. Yoga's 2,000. They're sister sciences. Mm-hmm. So they play into each other very well because we use breath. Breath to tap into our inner being, right? And it's through breath then that so much happens. So one of the cornerstones is breath work in Ayurveda, just as it is in yoga. Mm-hmm. So in Ayurveda, what we do is we look at, like you had mentioned before, mind, body, spirit. How do we do things in our life to ensure that all of those are in balance or as best we can, right?
There's in situations. Particular time.
Exactly, exactly. So really, when I see somebody in Ayurveda, what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, here, first, who are you? And who are you in Ayurveda? In Ayurveda, we look at the doshas. There's three doshas. And these three doshas are made up of elements of nature. Mm-hmm. So space, air, fire, water, and earth. So those five elements, just like in polarity, just like in energy healing, they are who we are. Mm-hmm. I don't know if all of us really understand that concept, because as we understand it and as we start to apply it, which is what Ayurveda does, it says, okay, let's take these elements. Now, each element is going to fall into a different category, and that category is going to be called a dosha. So if we take the Vata dosha, there's a Pitta dosha, and there's a Kapha dosha.
Mm-hmm.
Three doshas.
Three. Okay.
Three doshas. Mm-hmm. All five elements are going to be spread among these three doshas, okay? So if you're a Vata dosha, and I'm talking predominantly, we have all elements in us. Don't forget. We have all elements in us, but two, maybe three, are going to be more predominant than the other ones. And that's where we begin to fall out of balance.
Mm-hmm. You're a Vata, aren't you?
I'm a Vata Pitta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So she knows a little
That's
bit
great,
already.
Kelly.
I'm Pitta first.
Yeah.
I have no
Vata.
Idea.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, what am I?
Pitta Vata.
Okay.
And they're also by age. But what we look at when we look at people and their dosha, we determine what their dosha is, and they begin to learn about what makes up their dosha. They're like, oh my gosh, that's me. And oh my gosh, you're right. I always am dry. I'm always, mm-hmm. So for instance, let's just take Vata. Okay. So Vata is space and air, predominantly space and air. So go figure, this body is space and air. If that's true, I'm going to be very dry. Because just think of what happens when you go in an airplane,
mm-hmm.
and you get out of an airplane, you've been tossed through the air, your air blowing on you, you're completely dried out. That's what a Vata person is predominantly. So they can be, when they're out of balance, I'll talk out of balance for a minute, when they're out of balance, they can be very dry, skin dry. Their digestive tract is very, very challenged because it's space and air. They don't have fire and they don't have water. So they don't have the fire to metabolize the food. They don't have the water to moisturize it. So constipation for a Vata person is absolutely one of the biggest things.
Mm-hmm.
Dryness, again, anywhere in the body, hair, anything, nails, anything is going to be their predominant. Nervous system is driven by space and air. So they'll have a tendency to be more nervous, be more anxious. They all have a tendency to be very scattered in their mind, so they will have a difficulty focusing on one project. They'll be doing about 10 at the same time without that focus because, again, space and air, they're the wind. So their mind's blowing like the wind as well. So when they're balanced, however, so when we have a balanced Vata, that's somebody that's very creative, very energetic, can take on multiple projects at one time and complete them because they have that quick speed in getting things done when they're balanced. They can digest things fine, will still, when, even when they're balanced, may have just a few difficulties here and there. So their digestive is something they always have to be focused on. So that's eating the right foods, not drying foods. So, and when we talk more getting to the foods, but foods for a Vata type will be sour foods. There'll be also foods that are sweet and foods that are also salty. Why these foods? Well, Vatas are typically leaner people. They're thinner, thinner body structure, frame structure. So sweet is a food or a taste, I should say. Sweet is a taste that allows for building muscle. In Ayurveda, that's how we look at it. So those Vatas could use a little extra bulk in their body. Okay. Also, sweet has to do with proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. Just what a Vata type body needs. It's nutritive, it builds tissue, like I was kind of mentioning before. We know everything that has to do with what's in sweets. Almost everything today is sweet, right? Almost everything. So we don't really even need to go through what that is.
We get it naturally.
Naturally, everything's sweet.
We get to the astringent one. We're going to have to talk about that one.
Sour taste is also very good for Vata. Why sour is warming?
Oh, yes.
So Vata needs the warmth in their body. So sour tomatoes, yogurt, all those things are really important. Cheeses, pickles, vinegar, those things are all sour. It promotes appetite and digestion. So that's why it's so important. So Ayurveda, once we get into food, we talk about all these tastes, these six tastes, and what are the benefits of all of them? What do we get from each one of them? And what are they? What do they mean to our body? And then it's like, oh, of course I need all that. If I'm really going to be vital, if I'm going to be able to get all the nutrients I can and metabolize it all, I need all of them.
What about the other doshas we should talk about?
Yeah, okay.
Let's talk about them too.
Sure. I'll just mention briefly salt because we'll come back with the other doshas with that. But salty is holds water. And as we know, Vatas are very dry.
Right.
So whenever I work with a Vata person that's out of balance, I'm just going to say, watch out. Make sure that you're eating your sweet, sour, and salty foods, especially when you're out of balance, to bring that liquid in.
And, you know, I think it's interesting because I'm Pitta Vata, I think. Can't remember. It's been a while since I
probably.
But
I would say
I notice that I'll crave salty things.
Yes.
Right? So I think our bodies naturally know more than we do, right?
Absolutely.
If we just pay attention to what it is that our bodies tell us often. They're smarter than our brains, you know. Our brains are somewhere else a lot of the time.
Exactly.
But you do have, I have cravings and I'm like, oh, I'm forgetting to drink water. I'm forgetting to, you know.
Exactly.
I'll be like craving salt and I'm like,
your body's given the clue. The body knows.
Yes.
We just disregard it majority of the time.
Right.
We either eat too much when it says that we're full, or we eat at the wrong times of day because we're not aware that, you know, at the lunch is the most important time, our biggest meal, because we, our metabolism, the sun's the highest. We get prana, life force energy, we get from our foods that are grown in the earth, and that happens at noon. So our largest meal should be noon.
Europeans know that.
Sorry?
Europeans know that.
Absolutely. And they drink water that's not cold with ice.
Exactly. They don't.
That's why they're not supposed to.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to because it puts out your digestive fire.
Exactly.
Like
right away.
Yeah.
Douses it. Because what do? We go into a restaurant and we get cold ice water. Give it to us.
No ice, please.
And we can't digest our food.
When I was living in England, they used to laugh at... I worked at this hotel. And it was an international hotel, and I worked in the kitchen. And they would just laugh at all the Americans because they could tell when, you know, it was an order for the American because the American always asked for ice. And no one else did, just the Americans. Uh-huh. They wanted ice in every beverage. It's England, first of all. It's not hot. No, you know?
Exactly. Like, it is
why,
not hot.
Why do you need ice to begin with? But they always had ice in their drinks.
And I find that living in the South, because this is my first experience, well, I've been here a long time, but everyone here has ice.
Yes.
Everyone. All drinks have ice. And coming from Northern California, we weren't mindful of that at all. We didn't care whether we had ice or not, and I didn't.
Right. I mean, well, you don't know. And, you know, and no fault to people. I mean, what you don't know, you don't know, right?
You're so polite.
People are so hot.
People just aren't aware.
It's so hot in the summer that you feel like you're going to cool off with a glass of ice water or iced tea or something.
Right. It's okay, but if you're about to eat a meal, you don't want to do that. You know, if it's the middle of the day and it's 3 o'clock and it's hot, you want to have something cold, go for it.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
But it's just if we're talking if it's before a meal, that's when it can really, really create havoc for the body. And when we get undigested food in our body that's caused by this, then we're not feeling so good.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It's interesting because it's thousands of years old, you know, it's the same with Chinese medicine.
Yes.
You know, they have these other ways of explaining what now science can tell us through.
Right.
Now, you know, we're so focused on science.
And
our ability to prove what's going on.
Yes.
And unless you have a study that says this, it's not real.
Yeah.
Or on the flip side, what, you know, people have said for thousands of years, but not backed by a scientific research, now suddenly becomes real.
Right.
So it's very fascinating to me when you study, and they so correlate with research that you find in Western medicine.
Yeah, that's so true. And so it's amazing. I mean, it's been around. I mean, that's what I tell people when I start with them. It's been around for 5,000 years. I think they know something.
Yes.
You know, who are we to say who's a couple hundred years old?
Yeah.
You know? No, that's not right.
Yeah. They've only been doing that for thousands of years.
Yes. You know, who do you think we are?
Yes.
But it's interesting, though. And when people begin to apply it into their life, and that's all you do. You just naturally start to apply some of these very simple simple things that don't cost anything, very little, maybe some ginger, you know, maybe an herb.
Well, we grow a lot of ginger here.
Yes. So see, right. Put it to good use.
They just started growing ginger here a couple of years ago.
I love it.
I
am. Love it.
I'd be happy to know that since you moved here and need some ginger.
Absolutely. So there's... Do you want to go back to the dishes?
We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll take a break, and then when we get back, we'll talk more about, about the other two doshas.
Awesome.
We'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef. My name is Kelly Taylor. I'm here with my co-host, Janice Escott. So today we're talking with Melinda Macri, who has a great new retreat called Clearwater Retreat. Is that the entire name, Clearwater Retreat?
That's it.
Okay. It's in Chapel Hill, and we're talking about Ayurveda, which is a confusing topic, I think, for some people. And we started talking about doshas, which are almost like categories where people fit.
That's right.
And there are three of them. And we talked about Vata, and we were going to finish talking about Pitta and, well, whatever order you want. I really don't. Kapha or whatever you want to talk about next. There's three, and we've talked about one. So let's talk about the next one.
All right. That's a deal. The next one is called Pitta. And
it's
Pitta,
P-I-T-T-A.
P-I-T-T-A. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
That's right. And Pitta is made up primarily of fire with some water. Okay, where we had Vata was space and air.
Mm-hmm.
We now have Pitta that's mainly predominantly fire with a little bit of water. So a Pitta person, when they're out of balance, Pitta, if you can imagine your body being predominantly fire.
That would be me.
That's right. So, and you're out of balance.
Yes.
So what is that going to mean? Meaning you're going to have, if we look at the physical level, you could also have the digestive issue, meaning that you've been eating too many spicy foods, too many hot foods, too much liquor, all that creating heat in the body, which can cause heartburn, indigestion, and heartburn. It can cause rashes, an outbreak in the skin. Your eyes could get red and stingy. Those are kind of, you'll break out mainly, not just break out skin-wise, but also break out in your speech. So you could be very argumentative. You could be very forceful. You could be, shout out and angry and those sort of things. So that's when a pitta is out of balance, and look out, right?
Who wants that?
You do not want a pitta out of balance.
I just said this to Janice when I walked in today. I was like, I am just so angry this week. That would be it.
Her pitta's up.
Yeah,
that would be it.
That would be it.
I what has she been eating?
Everything's just annoying me, you know? So that must be what it is.
Right, that's right. Now, pittas on the flip side, just like vatas, they each have their positive and negative just based upon out of balance or imbalance. Mm-hmm. So pittas that are in balance, you got to love because they're mainly drivers. So heads of corporation are mainly pitta people, right? Because they get things done. Mm-hmm. They make things happen. Things are direct. You follow things in a line. There's mm-hmm. no going outside so much as a Vata person is. They're mm-hmm. more creative, more all around. A Pitta is very much more direct. Mm-hmm. Great leaders, very kind. They don't have that aggressiveness to them because they're balanced out. So they're, just sweet, loving people. Their bodies obviously are going to be, we didn't talk about, if they're in balance, they're in balance. They can eat pretty much whatever they want. Right? They just have to be careful because they have that fire, unlike the Vata, because they have the fire, they can diet. Their metabolism is excellent. Theirs is the best of all three doshas. So they can metabolize pretty much what they want. So when they go too far, that's when they run into the heartburn and indigestion and they get into the pitta out of balance situation. So that's pitta in a nutshell. And if we look at, okay, so what foods am I going to use?
Back to the taste.
Yeah, back to the six tastes. What is most important for a pitta person? Well, you're going to eat all six when you're in balance because that's what keeps you in balance. But we go out all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the way
because
we live.
Because you get out of balance on a lot of things. It's not just the food you eat, right?
No.
You see, this is the
mental
thing.
Mental state, anything can throw you out of balance. That's why a lifestyle of Ayurveda encompassing many things is important. This, we're just talking about foods and tastes at the moment. Mm-hmm. So for pitta people that are out of balance, again, they're out of balance in fire. And they're most likely to go out of balance. Also, seasons relate. So we're talking summer, right? Mm-hmm. Summer's hot.
Oh. Yep.
So really be careful, pittas, in the summer as we're approaching now, as the heat comes on, you want to be extra careful. Sweet can be important for pittas. Also can be bitter and astringent. Mm-hmm. Bitter are all our salads.
Yep.
Right? All of our detoxifying foods. So those are very important. They're anti-inflammatory and detoxifying, right? So pittas, if you're really heated, you're, of course, causing inflammation in your body. So eating those bitter foods is going to help that inflammation come down. Our next one is astringent. Astringent being one taste that Kelly said, oh, we got to talk about that one.
Well, because nobody knows what that
is. Right, exactly. So. And you do know what it is. We just don't maybe call it that way. But astringent foods are really all your beans and your legumes and your lentils, the pomegranates, cranberries, teas, all that stuff, all your dark greens. That's all considered your astringent foods. Those are healing, compacting, and drying foods. So if pitta is, overheated, they might want some of that astringent to kind of cool them back off again, astringent, bring things back in again, dry them out because they've been a little bit, they're kind of out there, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it.
So
greens, kale, get your kale out.
Exactly, get your kale out. Other astringent foods that we're going to really talk more about when we get into the kapha, so I'll leave that for right now. Mm-hmm. And just quickly to talk about kapha, kapha is made up of earth and water. So those are the other six, last of the five, mm-hmm. two elements, earth mm-hmm. and water. So a kapha person, and we're talking...
And how do you spell that?
K-A-P-H-A.
Okay. K-A-P-H-A.
I'm close enough.
Okay. Kapha.
Yeah, kapha. Kapha, being earth and water, is... And we talked about the Vata person being slender, very thin. The pitta person being more medium built, medium strength and bones. And then we're talking kapha people, because of the earth that's in their body, they're more earth structure, which is going to be a little bit larger structure.
I think of them as just more solid. Like
they're
the
solid, mm-hmm. just like the earth, right? Mm-hmm. So their bone structure is going to be a little bit wider because that's the structure. Just like when we think of earth, we think of mountains and rocks and all that sort of thing. And that's the mm-hmm. same thing that's going to be mm-hmm. in the body. And then they also have the water element also in there. So as we look at that, very interesting, huh? Because if you think of earth and water, I always think of my mom always used to have us go out when we got bee stings and get some sand and then add some water to it and create the mud. And we put the mud on our bee sting and take the sting out. It's really cooling. Huh.
That's handy.
Yes. Yes. Mom, you know all those good old-fashioned things.
That's right.
But it does take the sting away. It, keeps, uh-huh. it cools uh-huh. you off. So if you think of, though, an earth and water type body that gets that combination of that mud and they're out of balance, that mud gets very heavy, right? So a kapha person can get very dull, very inert, not want to move, right? They are the ones that if you go to a party are sitting at a couch in the corner so content and so happy, just sitting there observing, mm-hmm. okay? So they don't want to move. They're the ones that if you don't make them get up, they're going to stay in bed for a couple extra hours if they can.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're out of balance more in the body, they get those feelings, emotional feelings. As far as the body, they're just heavy. They're just heavy. Just mm-hmm. a heaviness to them. Easy mm-hmm. to gain weight. Very easy to gain weight. Not so easy to take it off.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to want the foods that not necessarily support them because of the earth and water, that structure part of them. So what foods do they want to eat? When they're in balance, I should say that, because we were doing that to the other doshas, to be in fairness to kapha. Mm-hmm. Kapha is probably the most loving dosha there is.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have that earth and water to them, they are so strong, strength, solid foundation. Anybody, you can count on a kapha from... with anything.
There should be a bumper sticker.
There should be a bumper sticker.
You can count on a kapha.
That would be fun. I love that.
You can find some other ones for the other.
Yeah. Sorry, that's coming out of this radio show.
Yeah. Be great.
Yeah, yeah. Why not?
Why not? Spread Ayurveda that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and they're wonderful. And so they just have to be very careful that they don't get out of balance. So when they're in, they're beautiful human beings. They get tasks done from A to Z. They're ones that go from the very beginning to the very end of something. I mean, they're just, you just got to love a kapha. You do.
Solid.
So as a vata with a kapha, wow. And as a pitta with a kapha, anybody with a kapha, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pitta, you know, just be careful.
Yeah.
Really make sure you stay in balance.
Yeah.
That becomes a little bit tricky that way. But then what we do is then we just kind of create foods. I'm sorry. So kapha. Foods for kapha are... pungent, mm-hmm. spice, right? Because we're going to want to spice them up because they have too much
mm-hmm.
water. So we want to, you know, we want to get them moving.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Pungent, bitter, and astringent. Those are the three tastes. So again, bitter, right? So we want to try to dry up too. That's why also the astringent is so important because we want to try to dry up the water that's in there. Now the kapha gets out of balance mainly, and everybody can, mainly in the spring. Why in the spring is that's when the rainy season.
So much water.
Mm-hmm. Everybody gets allergies mm-hmm. and gets all that congestion. Mm-hmm. Kids from the time they're born until they're about 15 are in the kapha stage. That's why so many kids get colds and get run down. That's why I'd love to work with more moms in that age bracket because you can help your child by knowing this. Huh. You know, making sure you're giving the right foods, this pungent, bitter, and astringent. You're not giving them ice cream. You're not getting them, you know, things that they may want when they're not feeling well, but give them things that will help with their whole congestion.
Right.
That's really important. So
and I
that's
think
the
that
beauty.
They tend to get out of balance with the sweet. Kapha,
yeah.
right? Isn't that the one?
Exactly.
That's
they love
their downfall.
Desserts.
Yeah.
They love their sweets. They love all that. So mm-hmm. for them, they're better off grabbing an apple. Because an apple is astringent, mm-hmm. artichokes, you know,
artichokes.
Asparagus, avocados, you know, all those things. Yeah,
all the good.
They're all good.
They're all good. But to know that those are the foods that you can, you know, when you're not feeling well in any one of those doshas, mm-hmm. then just apply those foods to your meal.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is Yes to the Chef, and our guest today is Belinda Macri, owner of Clearwater Retreat in Chapel Hill. And we're talking about
everything.
Everything.
But, you know, it's fascinating is how do you then take that and do something? And you were just getting ready. It's as simple as just eating a different food, right?
Exactly. And what I love to do, too, is just have people go, okay, let me tell me what you eat. Mm-hmm. On a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And then let me help you just add in, let's say it's sour you're not getting, or let's say it's stringent you're not getting. How can we easily add that in? And it is pretty easy once you understand, you know, if you get yourself a sandwich, you throw in some tomatoes and a cucumber and you have some apples on the side and you got your bread, you got salt and pepper, you're pretty much there.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, so there's ways that we can mm-hmm. look at our meals. And the most important thing about Ayurveda is that we eat when we're hungry. That's another thing here in America that we're not always so good about. We eat because we think we need to eat. Mm-hmm. It's breakfast. Oh, I got to eat my breakfast. As somewhere I was told that it's the most important meal of the day. It's not. It is not the most important meal of the day.
Thank goodness, because my children won't eat breakfast.
Yeah. You eat when you're hungry. Yes. When your belly growls, it is telling you it's ready to metabolize. Once again, mm-hmm. listening to our bodies, mm-hmm. right? So when our stomach growls, it says, It's time to eat. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that happens to me, and I realized that the other day that I felt really, really hungry, and I took like two bites of something, and I was, I'm done.
Satisfied.
I don't know what that's about so much as I think you're absolutely correct. I know you are in saying to pay attention to your body, to realize when you need a meal. Or when you just need something light.
Right, some almonds. Protein.
Something,
get you through.
Yes. Right. A piece of cheese. Right. My kind of go-to for something like that. But I think that something, the consciousness level mm-hmm. for eating is so absent in our culture. We haven't been taught to really pay attention to how we feel before we eat and then after we eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Because sometimes, I know with myself, I have overeaten mm-hmm. and I feel miserable.
Yes. Yeah. Or you eat the wrong thing.
Or mm-hmm. something. Yeah. Maybe one day you can eat it and then 2 weeks later you can't. Mm-hmm. But I think that consciousness level is really what you're talking about in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Is saying, pay mm-hmm. attention to how you are feeling and be conscious of, just stop for a second.
Yeah. Because we talk,
listen to our bodies.
You're so right on. And that's what all of the teachings of Ayurveda, this is just a short clip of it, but mm-hmm. when we talk about food, it's all about, where are you eating?
Mm-hmm.
How are you watching TV?
That's right. Or reading a
book. Did you give gratitude for your food that you're about to eat? Are you filling your plate full of color? Because every color has a phytonutrient that helps our lungs or our heart or our hair or something. So make sure colors are a part of your meal. And so there's not only is lunch the most important and dinner, we're light. Well, we're eating dinner before, you know, right around 6, before 7:30 anyway. So we have time to take a short walk afterwards before mm-hmm. we come. So it's really a total conscious approach to how I'm caring for the food that I'm eating, where I've bought it, you know, all those things. But you can do it all easy. But it's just an awareness. It's an understanding. It's a knowing. Wow, I didn't know that until you told me. Well, of course you didn't, because nobody's
told
really
you.
Talking
that's
about
right.
it.
You know? Exactly.
So that's really where my push is to try to get it out there. And that's where at Clearwater Retreat, I started the cooking classes once a month, is just a way to educate people of, look.
Mm-hmm. So what is maybe I don't know whether I want to call it typical or not, but an example of a menu that you might teach in a class?
Sure. What I typically do is I take one dish that I have everybody make like a sauce for. Let's say, because last time we did pesto, mm-hmm. and maybe we put pesto on spaghetti squash or something like that. So they would take the pesto and they would make it in three different ways. They would make it for a vata person, they'd make it for a kapha person, and they'd make it for a pitta person.
Oh, clever.
So and then, in a way that they're out of balance or that
out
they're
of balance.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be different. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, you want to.
Because it's really the
balance.
Out of balance. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We want to get people
back into balance.
Right. Okay. And so we then will show, like, for instance, for Vata, who we want warming foods, right? Heavier type of foods is best for them. Chips, popcorn, all that stuff is not good for them. Again, drying, right? Mm-hmm. So we want warmth, water, something in it. So if I'm going to make a pesto, I'm going to make sure, actually, pesto, the way it is perfect for vada. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it has the basil, which is kind of like a pungent, it's mm-hmm. warming. It mm-hmm. has the cheese in it, mm-hmm. which gives that also warming kind of feel to it. And it has garlic. It has the olive oil. So you want olive oil as heavier oil. So all those are really good for vada. Mm-hmm. If you look at pitta, though, and a pitta is out of balance, you're going to exclude many things. You may even take half cilantro and half basil. Or you might want to go all cilantro and forget about the basil.
Oh, good idea.
Or add a whole different green. You could add a chard or something.
Whatever. Exactly. And then for the oil, you're not going to use olive oil. You're going to use sunflower oil, which is more cooling. It's lighter. Mm-hmm. And then if you go on, and you're not going to use cheese, because pittas don't need cheese when they're out of balance, because that's going to create more heat.
Yeah. So what would you do? Some nuts or something?
Yes. Okay. Typically, we usually would use a nut, and we continue to use a nut, whether it be pine nut or it would be a walnut or something like that. The nut isn't as much of the importance as the oil.
Oil's being really, because that requires
quite a bit of oil to put into to make it a sauce. Mm-hmm. And then the kopfas, of course, we want to lighten them up, right? So the same is going to be true. They're the ones that we're probably going to do the balance of between the cilantro and the basil. Mm-hmm. Again, because you want, they're still, they're the heaviness you want to clear. And then we use the, they get garlic is included. You went in the pesto, but you would, I mean, you went in the pitta, but you would in the vada and the kapha. Mm-hmm. And then you'd use also the sunflower oil for the kaphas, again, lighter oil. So it's just that sort of thing. And they really learn whatever we're doing for a sauce. They really understand, wow, okay.
Yes.
That's how I can do this when I get home. And they get a list of all, every, you know, of the six tastes and all the foods that represent those six tastes.
Yep. It's really fascinating. I did a similar thing when I taught it. We would make a base dish, and then they would make their own their own sauce based on lists of what they could and that what was beneficial for them. And then it was fascinating because you have a class of 18 people and they all have different sauces, right? Because they're in culinary school, they're creating their sauce.
Right.
So I'm not telling them how to do it. So it was really fascinating to
love
see what ended up with what. And then inevitably you'd have somebody upset because they wanted the other one.
But I want this. But I want
that one. I love it.
Yeah, well, when you get back in balance, you can have
that one. That's right. Something to work towards.
Yes.
Well, Belinda, this has been I can't believe that we've been here an hour. We've learned so much from you. Thank you so much.
You're very good at explaining
it. Thank you. It's just great.
Thank you.
So here's a reminder for everyone. What you hear on Yes to the Chef is not meant to cure or heal anyone. Please consult your health provider regarding any questions you might have after you've listened to this show. And we're co-hosts Kelly Taylor, natural chef and instructor, and I'm Janice Escott, Cordon Bleu chef and instructor. Happy cooking, Kelly.
Happy cooking, Janice.
Happy cooking, Belinda. This has been great. Thank you so much.
Better eat if it kills you. Pass me a pancake, mandrake. Look in the fendel, mandel.
Amen.
Have an hors d'oeuvre, Irby. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Pasta, bazoola, tallulah. I said, happy.